Hello again, witches, seekers, and friends, and welcome to the Fat Feminist Witch Podcast, the show where we do a little ranting, raving, and wand waving. I'm your host, Paige, and together we're going to explore magic and spirituality, social justice, the psychic realm, and most importantly, your magical body. Hey, friends, and thank you so much for tuning in to the show today as I talk about the magic that exists in your very own body. This is a really big topic, like bigger than I realized when I began. So we won't be covering everything today. And if this topic is something you guys are all interested in, I would love to do another episode about it. So let me know. Today, we're focusing on palmistry and making magic with your hands, magical jewelry and body art, and body or medical astrology. All of these topics individually are much bigger than what I can cover today. So if you feel called to, I highly recommend doing some further research. It's all super interesting. And I've got a recommended book list where you guys can get started in the description for this episode. You can also check out a couple of my past episodes where I talk about bodies, like episode 25, where I talk about glamour magic with Deb Castellano, episode 32, Chakras Plain and Simple. It's about your whole chakra system and cleansing your chakras. And episode 33 about fat phobia. So let's begin with the hands, the ultimate magical tool. Generally speaking, we all have a dominant hand and a recessive hand. Your dominant hand is your writing hand, while your other one is known as recessive because it's just not the hand you instinctively use first or even the most. In magic, your dominant hand is known as your power or projective hand, and it's the hand through which energy comes out when you cast magic. The other is the receptive hand through which you receive magical energy. Now, this isn't a strict rule or anything, but you can consciously use your hands in this way by using the projective hand to cast spells, send healing energy, or put up magical barriers, for example. And using the other one to hold your crystals or your herbs or the things that you draw energy from. You can also receive healing energy from someone else through this hand. If you're ambidextrous, which means you have two dominant hands, you know, both your hands work the same, figuring out exactly how it feels to project and receive energy that'll be how you determine the difference. You might even have to consciously choose which one you want to be which. If you have only one usable hand, I recommend looking into mudras, which is like hand yoga. Certain positions help you do things like pull in energy or activate certain parts of your body or your brain, your energy centers, and others send energy out. So, you know, an obvious example is you can use your flat palm facing in front of you for a protective gesture, you know, stop, no, stop right there. You can point with your fingers to use as a wand, or you can use combinations of different fingers touching for different purposes, like your index and your thumb. What does that mean to you? Check it out. You might find it super interesting. And I still found it to be very calming, just like full body yoga. Though we don't always talk about them, your hands do have chakras as well. There are quite a few there, but the biggest ones are in the center of the palms. I sometimes like to visualize those chakras in my hands moving in like opposite directions, you know, like watery whirlpools. Oh man, I watched Clash of the Titans last weekend. I might watch it again this weekend. So, you know, one hand has the whirlpool going the way that sinks the ships down into their doom, and the other one spits them back out again. So when I close or cleanse or balance my chakras, I also cleanse these places in my hands. And when I do any sort of spell casting or magic, I use oil blends, magical oil blends, to anoint my hands just in general or even for specific purposes. Of course, the most famous type of hand-related magic is the divinatory art of palmistry or palm reading. Palmists study the physical characteristics of your hand, including lines, mounts, and its general shape and size, to see inner characteristics of you, of the person they're reading. And they can even determine, you know, the future of their life path. In these lines and mounts, a palmist can see whether or not you'll have kids, when you'll fall in love and when, you know, out of love, possible future health problems, and even how big of a role something like spirituality will play in your life. Professional palm readers who are legit are unfortunately kind of rare anymore, but there are lots of great guides that can teach you the basics so you can begin to see the story of your own life in your palms. If you guys are interested, I did create a Pinterest board of some of the sources I used to study this whole topic, and again, I'll share the link for that in the description. Or if you already follow me on Pinterest, you can find the board called Your Magical Body. Now, I happen to have this really, really cool palmistry kit. It's very psychedelic looking, made by Mattel in 1969. That includes these clear sheets. They're like hand maps that you can put over top of your own hand so you can find the lines and mounts. And it comes with this really intense little like guidebook and score sheet. It is so cool, but of course not necessary. I'll be sharing some pictures of the kit on Instagram if you guys are really curious. And yes, I said Mattel. That is the company that makes Barbie. And thanks to some other witches giving me the 411, I now know they also released an astrology kit and one that's foretell cards or fortune telling with cards that all have this ridiculous psychedelic art and large plastic book looking case. And they released all three in 1969. If you have either the astrology or the card one and you are interested in selling them, please reach out. Because I no doubt will be trying to collect these until the day I die. So palmistry, getting back on topic here, really is an ancient practice that has so far been traced back to India when you look at some of the specifics. But it seems to have taken place all over the Eurasian continent, right? So all across Europe, all through, you know, all the way through to the Pacific Ocean, throughout Asia, as well as Russia, the Middle East, and Siberia. When you look at palmistry, it features elements from a lot of different cultures all across that area blended together. So you have elements of Hindu spirituality. You have a little bit that is obviously taken from China's divination method, the I Ching. And of course, the practices of Roma travelers who practice fortune telling. It progressed west and made its way to ancient Greece. It was super, super popular, right? Because in ancient Greece, they already practiced astrology as a science, medical astrology especially. So palmistry really caught on there. Apparently, Aristotle taught it to Alexander the Great, and he was a really big fan, and would use it to kind of see the character of his soldiers or his enemies. Kind of neat. This is why, as we get, you know, a little further on in our topic today, our fingers, mounts, and certain lines on our hands are named after important planets or gods in ancient Greece and Rome, like Apollo and Venus. Palmistry, as we know it now, had this major revival in the 1800s in England. You know, this was around the same time that other spiritualist topics like mediumship and clairvoyance became super, super popular with the elite. So there were tons of palm readers at the end of the 1800s and the early 1900s that read entire parties. The most popular of those almost always said that they had studied in India or from an Indian teacher. So I think that it really is the main root of palmistry. Now, to read your palm, you begin with the dominant or projective hand. Some people believe that the other hand's lines and mounts represent, you know, either a past life or maybe some karmic things that you're carrying with you. So first, with you know, after you determine which hand is your dominant one, you look at the lines. There are a lot of them there. Depending on how old you are, there are maybe a little bit less than I have, or maybe a little bit more. But there are four major ones that are read in palmistry. Those are the life line, the heart line, the head line, and the fate line. The life line extends from like the edge of your palm, above your thumb, right in that crook there, and travels in an arc towards your wrist. The length of the line doesn't actually predict when you're going to die, like they say in movies, but what it does show is your life force, your overall health and vitality, as well as major life changes and events, and even some information about future relationships, accidents, and changes. If you have a long, narrow, deep, and unbroken lifeline, it indicates a long life full of vim and vigor. You are the darling of the lifelines. Not all of us have it so easy, though. So if that line swoops into the mount of the moon, which is at the base of your palm, opposite the thumb, you may be someone with a travel itch. You know, you've got that wanderlust who's always looking to go on romantic adventures, according to my mystique palmistry kit. If your lifeline has smaller lines that make it look like a chain, which I do, this can indicate poor emotional or physical health. And if that chain smooths out along the line, it means that you make changes that correct these issues. My lifeline is chained all throughout childhood, the early years of my life. And you can see that line smooth out in the area that would indicate my mid-20s, when I radically changed my life and my health habits, the way I ate and treated my body, especially. If you have breaks in the lifeline, that also indicates a radical change in your whole way of life. The headline is above the lifeline, also extending from the crook of your thumb. If your headline is pretty straight and horizontal, it means you're a practical person who prefers facts and straightforward truth. If it slopes down towards your wrist, you're more likely to be creative, imaginative, and a little bit daydreamy. Your headline might connect with the lifeline. In this case, you may have very strong family ties and might even spend a lot of time focusing on becoming more independent through your life. Stray lines or crosses along the headline can indicate things like headaches, mentally confusing times, and even intellectual obstacles that will affect you throughout your life. The heart line is probably the line people are most interested in. This line shows how you express affection and intimacy and some obstacles and important events in your future. Your heart line starts under either your index or middle finger and travels outward toward the pinky finger or your outer palm. If your heart line is very smooth with few other lines crossing it, this indicates a very independent life where your most important relationship is with yourself. That doesn't mean you don't have any other relationships, but the most important one is with you. You're focused on you this lifetime. If your heart line swoops up towards your pinky finger, you're a real gold digger. Basically, you factor money and financial stability into your love and relationship choices. No hate, I firmly respect that. As far as I'm concerned, that is reparations for women being unequal to men for so many years. Now, if your heart line is very frayed, you are super flirty and may have a lot of relationships. And if it's extra long and stretches from side to side of your whole palm, you might be a little bit dramatic and have issues of jealousy in your relationships. You got a little too much heart going there. In general, lines and patterns that intersect with or cross your heart line represent the people you love and the situations that matter to your heart throughout your life. The fate line runs up the middle of your palm. This line is tied to your life path, including school and career choices, successes, and obstacles. Sometimes this line, you know, it reflects circumstances and experiences that are just beyond your control. You know, they're acts of fate. My fate line rises from that mount of moon there on the bottom outside pad of my palm. This, according to my kit, indicates a freelance career in the public eye and is also tied to spirituality and intuition. It then ends up at my heart line, which indicates unstable emotions that really affect my career path. I know I've mentioned my troubles with regular, like, muggle employment before, but I've really struggled always with my depression and anxiety the most when it comes to work and employment. Working at a lot of the jobs that I have had very serious negative effects on my depression and my anxiety. A lot of people, you know, hate their jobs. I didn't hate my job always, but I always had a problem with it. Another problem I have is so silly, but it's like my innate kind of communist beliefs also make the entire experience of collecting paychecks from corporations fucking guilt-ridden for me. Like, it's really ridiculous. When I worked the counter at a Chevron-like gas station, like, I worked in a convenience store, right? I thought every day about the fact that Chevron had dumped a bunch of oil into the ocean and wanted to hurl myself into that same gross oily ocean every time I cashed my paycheck. It's so extreme. It's really ridiculous, but that's why I'm so serious with my work now and what it is I do for money. What sponsors do I accept? What organizations and, you know, other witches can I support with that money? What can I give the people who support me that way? If your fate line stretches towards your pinky finger, those are the people for whom fame and fortune really truly await. You'll be great with money, and financial gain and growth are a big part of your future. If it starts right at your lifeline, you're a real DIY kind of person who gets things done. You know, you're independent, you have the will to overcome everything, you're someone who will build yourself from the ground up, so to speak. Outside of the lines, we have the mounts, which are the fleshy parts underneath your fingers and your thumb and on that outside edge of your palm. Your four fingers each have a planetary and elemental association. So your index is aligned with Jupiter and the water element, the middle with Saturn and Earth, the ring finger with Apollo or the sun and fire, and the pinky with Mercury and the element of air. So under each finger, those are your mounts of Jupiter, Saturn, Apollo, and Mercury, respectively. Then you have the mount at the base of your thumb, which is Venus, and on the outside bottom corner of your palm, the mount of the moon. Then you have these smaller areas through the middle of your palm, basically, from side to side. So you have two mounts of Mars and a plane of Mars. The mount of Jupiter, under your index there, is the seat of your ambition. If it's, you know, just nice and round and fleshy, you're proud and ambitious. If it's overdeveloped or sticks out or is very puffy, you may have a problem with arrogance and pride. A small star on this mount indicates a relationship with famous people, which is kind of interesting, while a triangle indicates someone who is very good at delegating and managing people. Next, we have the mount of Saturn, which tells the story of your wisdom. A round mount of Saturn, just a kind of regular one, shows a love of alone time, you know, art and music, and someone who's very thoughtful. If it's bulging out, you may have issues with sadness and fear of the future. If it's flat, you're more outgoing and are less at the mercy of Saturn, who is the astrological taskmaster. So not bad. In general, if any of these mounts are flat, it means that that topic just won't be a big factor in your life. A star in the middle indicates you'll be a person of great distinction, but get this, will experience a, quote, terrifying climax to life. While a star very low shows you will live a life with distinguished and famous friends, whose destinies are soon to come to a tragic end. That's showbiz, baby, I guess. Saturn doesn't fuck around. It's the Suge Knight of palmistry. So, next, if you have a nice little round mount of Apollo, this is the talent mount, that shows that you have an enchanting personality and a love of art. While an overdeveloped one shows someone who likes the spotlight, maybe a little too much, that could be good or bad, depending on the ways that you seek fame. Luckily, if you have a square there, you will be protected from the evil results of a quest for fame. A star or a circle in the middle indicates great wealth, but no happiness. Yikes. You'll be very prestigious, you know, a lot of respect. You'll find material success is just not everything you wanted, though, and that can be very disappointing. Mercury's mount is that of ingenuity. And if it's nicely developed, you have a good mind for business, and are also a really happy person, and you have the kind of happiness that is contagious. If it's overdeveloped, you might be into get-rich-quick schemes instead, and you might always overshoot your shot. It happens. If it curves out of the palm, like kind of dramatically, it shows you have really great public speaking skills and probably a very good sense of humor. A small island in the middle denotes someone who moves at the speed of Mercury and is always changing their mind and changing their goals. And this can really come back and bite you in the ass if everything is left half finished. So that's just something to watch out for. Lower on the palm, the mount of the moon, is the seat of your imagination. And a nice, soft, round one is dreamy, warm, imaginative, and it indicates a love of art, travel, and adventure. Isn't that fun? If it's big and puffy, you're all those things, but you dream so big that you often end up disappointed. If it's firm and solid, you're very practical, and you're very into family. You know, you've got sturdy roots. Lines beginning or ending here, or if you have things like whorls and loops and bowing lines, all of that can indicate things like psychic power, intuition, and ESP, as well as nervousness and general emotional sensitivity. The amount of Venus's feelings, of course it is. If it's round, you are warm and loving. If it's puffy and biggest near the wrist, you are super passionate and a little overindulgent. Grill-like lines show you are full of sensual desire. That one's fun. While studying this, I, of course, looked at my own hand and realized I only have 3 mounts under my fingers. And they're actually in between my fingers. They're not underneath the corresponding fingers at all. The mount between my first, I looked it up. The mount between my first 2 fingers indicates I'm an intellectual leader. The next says I'm someone who takes risks and loves to see how wacky ideas play out. And the last means I'm a good moneymaker. And I'd really love it if that one could start being true sometime soon. But if you only have these 3 mounts on your hand there under your fingers, that is what they mean. When I did a whole palm reading using both, you know, this kit from 1969 and some more legit research and real books, I found the palm reading to be super accurate, like birth chart accurate. There's even a way to tell when certain events in your life might happen using angles that come out from the Mount of Venus. And so far, the big moments and chains and crosses in my life and heart lines all really line up with those ages, those periods of time. So if you look, there's this big mess here in my early 20s on my heart line, which then smooths out completely until it gets to my mid-30s, where different lines indicating new positive and negative relationships just suddenly like blow up and continue into old age. The chains in my lifeline, like I said, the ones that indicate ill health and emotional distress and trauma, they end around my mid-teens. And then there's this big break around age 28, indicating I made a very radical change, which I did. And then it's pretty smooth sailing until I hit my late 40s and I decide to change some shit up. And then this wave of restlessness hits me. So far, I can't speak to my late 40s, but so far, this all lines right up for, you know, pun intended. So you can use palmistry to get to know yourself or someone else, or as a fortune-telling and divination tool. I always really thought that palmistry would be a really fun way to flirt. You know what I mean? Like, that's how it's used in a lot of paintings and movies and stories. It's such a fun way to flirt because you get to hold their hand and then, you know, speak about their heart line. But no one ever does it seriously. You know, no one who reads palms seriously ever uses it for flirting purposes. So I'm just going to say that I think we should all start doing that. So you can do that. And you can also use the planetary and the elemental associations in your magical practice. You can use the corresponding fingers to direct specific energy. You can draw or tattoo symbols onto your fingers. If you've seen small tattoos of magical and elemental symbols on your fingers, those are all specifically placed in that place on the finger for a real purpose. You can also wear jewelry in metals and crystals that kind of suit your purposes. So the ring finger, which is, you know, everyone's favorite for rings, is aligned with Apollo, who was the Greek god of the sun. But he was also like a patron of the arts and beauty. He was like, you know, he was the most beautiful man and he shone like the sun. He really is the source of the expression, the golden god. Well, him and Eros, but Apollo as the sun. So this finger represents beauty, creativity, and self-expression. On the dominant hand, it sends those vibes out to people around you. I actually wear my college ring on that finger, which is yellow gold and a green, it's just a jewelry stone, it's called spinel, which is just good for overall luck and personal strength. Also, green just makes me think of growth and prosperity. This is a ring that I think definitely says something about me, and I also happen to think that creativity and self-expression are the very definition of beauty, if you want to go all the way. On the opposite hand, this would work to attract those things to me. So if you have crystal jewelry, some good stones for the ring fingers are green jade, citrine and sunstone for that sunny connection, turquoise, rose quartz, and then something like a garnet or a ruby for that really fiery vibe. I also wear a small copper ring on the index finger of my left hand. This finger is aligned with Jupiter, but also the water element, self-esteem, and prosperity. So I wear it in the hopes of attracting that prosperity and that vibe of expansion of Jupiter, as well as watery loving emotions from the people around me. Copper is a Venusian metal. It's Venus aligned, and a really good conductor of all kinds of energy. So it's also really great to use in your dominant hand for projecting and on the receptive hand to bring in extra energy from whatever you happen to be holding or touching. Some good crystals for this one are lapis lazuli, peridot, which is a really nice green, and most colors of tourmaline, though I happen to think that watermelon tourmaline, since it's expensive, it only comes in small pieces. This is a great finger for a watermelon tourmaline ring. In general, choose stones that align with the planet or element of the finger to bring out or exemplify that energy, and ones from opposing elements or vibes to keep the energy a little softer. So, for example, something like coral or aquamarine would be really soothing and get rid of some of the harshness of Saturn on your receptive middle finger. Then again, if you're looking for harsh because you like to flip the bird, try something like onyx or garnet on your projective middle finger, or as my sister calls it, her communication finger. Consider the colors or materials of your magical jewelry just beyond crystals. The metals also have magical associations, right? So gold is sunny and prosperous and full of action. Copper and rose gold are romantic and beautiful, and even I think rose gold and copper have a little bit of that sexy vibe because of their associations with sexy deities like Venus and Lilith. Silver is very watery and lunar. Steel is defensive and strong. And pewter strengthens daily magical tasks and folk magic and synchronicity. It really is like the magical metal of the common man. I think it's interesting that so many, I don't know if it's still true about pagan and witchy jewelry, but a lot of it used to be made of pewter. You had pewter charms on, you know, a black cord. And that really is a great metal or alloy for magic, even though it's not super fancy or expensive. So you can use jewelry to activate energy all throughout your body by wearing certain crystals or metals at your main chakra points or in your wrists or ankles, or of course anywhere that you can pierce. The ears are connected to the throat chakra. So I often wear these lapis lazuli earrings when I work, and especially when I'm recording or speaking, to lend some of that, you know, good communication and also a very spiritual energy to my words. I hang a chrysocolla pendant between my throat and my heart, as it's associated with both, and it feels cleansing and also very fortifying. I feel like my upper and lower chakras are all working in tandem when I wear it. I also keep crystals in my bra that work with nearby chakras for various purposes. I don't personally wear jewelry around my belly. I can't even imagine what a belly chain would cost for someone my size. But if you do, or if you have a belly button piercing, you can choose jewelry that strengthens or balances the solar plexus or sacral chakras, which are above and below the belly button. The solar plexus is great for, you know, increasing your self-esteem and your energy, while working with your sacral is all about passion and sensuality and sexuality. Naturally, piercings in the genital area can also be designed to work with the sacral chakra, and your connection to sensuality. You can also use jewelry that's grounding for the root chakra, which can increase your courage and your overall energy levels. Ankle jewelry, on the other hand, or other leg, is great for bringing energy up from the earth. So I like to use stones like amber, bloodstone, most jaspers, and moss agate for those purposes. Get ankle jewelry or a little chain or something. That always makes me feel like I'm very connected to the earth. Amber is really great. It makes me feel like I'm pulling up this healing, pain-reducing kind of energy, while bloodstone makes it feel, I feel very connected. I feel like I have those kind of sturdy roots in the earth, but it's also like a very prosperous stone, so it makes me feel kind of badass. I know from experience that anxiety, fear, and depression can keep you from manifesting your most magical life on the best of days, and which is, these days are not the best. That's why if you're struggling or feeling lost, I want you to consider reaching out to a professional licensed therapist through BetterHelp. Within 24 hours, they'll assess your needs and match you with a therapist that is specially trained to deal with everything from depression and anxiety to grief, conflicts at home, and even sexuality and gender across the spectrum. It's all online, so there's no awkward social distancing in the waiting room. You're in the comfort and safety of home. You can message your therapist anytime and schedule weekly audio or video chat sessions. The service is available worldwide. It's more affordable than in-person therapy, and they offer financial aid to those who need it. Lately, so many people have been reaching out that BetterHelp is actually recruiting more counselors in all 50 states right now. I want you to manifest the life of your dreams, starting today. As a listener, you can get 10% off your first month by visiting betterhelp.com/fatfeministwitch. Join over 1 million people taking charge of their mental health. Again, that's betterhelp, HELP.com/fatfeministwitch. Wild magic grew out of a fascination for herbalism, a love of witchcraft, and a passion for creating natural, chemical-free products that honor our bodies and the earth. All items are handmade by Clarissa Camp with you and Mother Earth in mind. Made with love, purpose, and a sprinkle of magic, we craft intentional products for mindful witches who have a profound relationship with the planet. Our ritual bath salts and sprays are crafted with herbal and mineral ingredients to support your magical intentions, cleanse your sacred space, provide protective barriers, or just bring a beautiful chemical-free scent to your body or your home. So visit our website to learn more and check out our herbal-infused body butters, lip balms, and healing salves, because right now listeners of the Fat Feminist Witch podcast can get 20% off by going to thewildmagic.com/fatfeministwitch and entering promo code FatFemWitch20 at checkout. So something that I was really excited to talk about today is tattoos. Specifically, spiritual tattoos from around the world and how to ritualize the entire tattooing process for spiritual purposes. What I discovered is that this is a humongous and incredibly cool topic. This will most definitely be an episode all on its own once I know enough to speak on it. I found so much cool information, and I realized that if I included all of it, we would be here for hours and hours and hours. So I will share some of my sources and what I found, and a little bit about the position of tattoos on your body. I found a really, really cool book called Conscious Ink by Lisa Beretta, which is all about the meaning behind the placement, size, colors of your tattoos, and rituals that you can do. So, you know, pre-inking rituals that you can do to choose spiritual symbols and designs or to get you ready for the process, and even some really cool examples of what she calls intuitive tattooing, which means you pay a practitioner to intuitively create a tattoo for you based on readings with tarot or astrology or mediumship, or communicating with your spirit guides or whatever it is that they do. This is usually a pretty long process, and you don't know exactly what you'll end up with, but the experience itself is very intentional and personal. One of the practitioners she talks about also uses an old stick and poke method versus the gun, so there's more of a connection to the person being tattooed. You know, it's just that little bit more intimate. This entire process really echoes a lot of the history of spiritual tattoos that I found, in which tattoo symbols were chosen based on a lot of factors in a person's current life and their past and, you know, their hopes and visions for the future. So we had symbols of spiritual protection or power if someone was a practitioner, different animals and plants that have certain meanings, and celestial images, as well as kind of that human geometry, you know, spirals and squares. All of that has been a part of the art of tattooing as far back as we know. And of course, that was done by hand for centuries. And the process could stretch days or even weeks. The oldest human known to have tattoos existed 5,600 years ago. He was a mummy that was found in the ice. And they mainly consisted of dots and dashes in areas of the body that surprisingly align with some of the principles of Chinese medicine, like the meridians for health and fighting disease, or some were acupressure points to soothe the stomach. And it was assumed maybe he had a weak stomach. And on the back of the knees, which is a very sensitive healing area and also kind of a place of some spiritual energy for a lot of cultures. The actual placement of the tattoos, whether they were chosen for spiritual purposes or not, can say a lot to you about why you got them and how they might affect your personal energy. So this is what Lisa Beretta says in Conscious Ink. Tattoos that reflect how you feel about the now are, in a mystical sense, drawn to being placed on the right side of the body. This is the side of the body that reaches how you feel about your current life experiences and is governed by your logical left brain. It's where things we are currently passionate about are comfortably expressed. However, tattoos that want to be inked on the left side of your body connect to your mystical side, where you possibly, unknowingly, want images of objects you are intuitively drawn to, along with images of things that are dear to your heart. This side of the body links into the emotional, vulnerable right brain, which displays our emotional connection to our inner self and wounds. Tattoos on the front of your body reflect your social mask, how you want to be perceived as you move through the outside world. It represents the conscious part of us and the future. Front-facing images hold clues to the archetypes that you identify with on a day-to-day basis. Alternately, tattoos on the back of the body reflect the past, where you draw strength from experience, and even a hint at an awareness of prior lifetimes. Sometimes they can contain archetypes that relate to the emotional burdens you carry and the strengths you need to draw upon to help carry the load. She also gives a list of areas on the body and what it means to tattoo there, what kind of energy that it will bring to that part of your body, whether or not it will have a positive or negative effect on your personal energy. So if you get a tattoo, you know, on the brow, that is very intuitive. You know, this is your third eye. On the face expresses various masks of our personality and shows how we face the world, what things give us strength to face the world. Behind the ears is a portal for past life experiences and what we remember from other incarnations. Right on the ears is for listening to guidance. On the throat and neck is where, you know, communication, speaking our truth. It's really where thoughts and emotions come together. The shoulders indicate some of the burdens that we carry with us. The chest and torso, she says this place is for your private self, your relationship issues, your heart and love emotions, self-esteem, and feelings of worthlessness or worthiness are held here. Your arms and hands, they make connections to the external world that also show what things you embrace. You know, who or what are you holding on to, or what do you want to let go of? Your upper arm shows strength, while your forearm shows your goals, or what you go after in life. The hands are associated with giving if it's on the right hand and receiving if it's on the left hand. Likewise, you know, your dominant and receptive hand, what you tattoo there will either go out or come in. The back is where we store our unconscious emotions, past life experiences. The upper back, right between your shoulder blades there, this is where anger is stored. So tattoos can reflect unresolved anger issues or be images that help us resolve our inner conflicts depending on what image energy you choose to embody. The lower back is outward expression to the material world, including sexuality. The hips hold energy for moving forward in life. The butt is where we hold emotions, of course. The thighs are where we hold personal strength, trust in our abilities, and energy for our experiences. Knees show pride and flexibility. They also pull in energy for self-respect. Lower legs express movement towards goals and also what we leave behind as we move forward, depending on where you put them. Ankle tattoos convey balance and what we need to feel supported. Feet tattoos, this is our expression towards security and survival and the steps we take to feel grounded. Also, foot tattoos hurt like an absolute bitch. I can tell you that for a fact. They hurt. So that's a pretty serious tattoo. Going through that list, I mean, if you are planning to get tattoos in the future and you want to take in their meanings and, you know, the meanings of the placement on your bodies, that's great. But you can also look at this to see a little bit about yourself based on your past tattoo choices. So interestingly, to me anyway, I have no tattoos on the left side of my body, none. I have a piercing. It's the only piercing I have left. I got it when I was 15, but no tattoos. Every one of them here on the right side of my body, and there's three there, one on the back shoulder, forearm, and foot. They really are this tiny little like time capsule of who I was at the time that I got them. I also have one on my back right between the shoulder blades that I absolutely hate and want to cover. And it's because it was a matching tattoo with people I was friends with at the time, and they just turned out to not be who I thought they were. And the tattoo just kind of bums me out now. Not bums me out, but it makes me kind of mad. I was really obviously dedicated to our friendship, and I don't feel that they were. That spot, of course, indicates unresolved anger or images that help us deal with the unresolved anger. And there's definitely some unresolved anger being held right there. So now I'm going to be working on designing a tattoo that can cover this one and maybe helps resolve some of the anger I feel about that whole time in my life. It happens to be a time in my life that is very pertinent right now, and that has been coming up in a lot of different ways. The tattoo itself is fine. Like, it's a shamrock made of a green and gold ribbon. Like, it's cute. But looking at it feels like I'm looking at someone else. It's just not me anymore. Something really interesting I've seen a lot of mentions of in terms of tattoos is that for large chunks of history, tattooing was the domain of women. In ancient Greece, tattoos were only done on women. Tattooing was a huge part, and still is, of indigenous cultures of the South Pacific, so places like Fiji, Samoa, and the Maori people of New Zealand. To be clear, if you're not from these places or invited to get a traditional tattoo from a tattoo master, and other people inside the culture, getting these tattoos can be super, super disrespectful. So the tattoos of Samoa, for example, they're incredibly personal. They're tied to each person's community, their family, their future, their role, their entire life. Men receive a tattoo known as a pea, which starts at the waist and goes to the knees. And the women get the malu, which begins at the upper thighs, like below the butt, and down just past the knees. The pea is much more intricate and has much more forceful lines, where the malu is, you know, it's very thin lines, very distinct lines, very, what is the word that I am looking for there? Sometimes they describe them as dainty, but as far as I know, getting almost your entire leg tattooed, you know, with a tiny comb at the end of a bamboo stick resting on an old turtle shell, you're not you know, dainty if you get that done. That is a mark of courage, as far as I'm concerned, right? And to these cultures as well. They appear to be random lines and geometry to us who are outside of these cultures, but those symbols all have a lot of significance, and the way that they're tattooed does as well. And I obviously agree with them. It's such a long and painful process to get these humongous tattoos. That is something that is really a point of personal and community-wide pride and really gets you respect. Or if you don't get it finished because the pain is too severe, you can actually experience some shame. The story of how tattooing came to Samoa is really, it's really cute. It's this wonderful mythological tale that I found back when I was in college and I had to do a project on American Samoa, and I learned that Samoa in general is really, really cool and a very interesting place. And I found this folk song and the story of how tattooing, or the tatau, came to Samoa. So the story begins with two beautiful maidens who are swimming from the island of Fiji with their tattooing kit. Along their journey, they're singing this beautiful chant about women and tattoos and how it's something special just for the women, and men do not get them. But along the way, they see this gigantic clam on the seafloor, like gigantic, and it was so enticing that they dove for it. They dove super, super deep and became disoriented. And when they came up, they reversed their chant. They were confused. And tattoos, for quite some time, were just for men. Fun, right? I love the giant clam because that sounds like a purposeful trick to me. I bet that clam was some sort of deity or god, and he was like, hey, I want a tattoo. Right now, tattoos are becoming more and more popular with women, as well as the South Pacific again. So Indigenous women are reclaiming their beautiful ancient tattoo designs and wearing them proudly on their legs. And even in New Zealand, the Maori there have these incredible chin tattoos. Oh my God. I highly recommend looking at pictures. I wish I could show you pictures through this podcast because they're so striking and it's so empowering to see women with a tattoo on their face, knowing that there are still so many people who judge tattoos in general, but especially tattoos on women. Now, other Maori probably are not judging those women with chin tattoos, but the white people, the colonizers, the New Zealanders now, rather than the Maori, they still have those beliefs about tattoos and women. So it really is, again, a sign of courage. But all over the world, more women are getting tattooed. And right now in the US, statistically, more women than men get tattooed on a regular basis. So get out there and get a tattoo. If you've been thinking about it, it is your feminist duty to get a tattoo. So if you like the story of the first tattoo of Samoa, I have a really fun song that, again, that I found back when I was doing this project that I still jam out to all the time because it's very good. It's called Tatau a Samoa by the Golden Ali'is, who are like this cute retro like hotel lounge band from American Samoa. Like they're very 60s and 70s. It's so chill. I love it. The songs are in Samoan, of course, but you can find translations all over the internet. And I promise you can enjoy it even if you don't speak it. So I'll put a link in the description so you can also confuse your friends by jamming out or even singing to a song in Samoan, which you do not speak. if you look them up, I also recommend a song called Pele Moana, because that is the chillest song I've ever listened to in my life. It really helps me calm down. So like I said, this is something that I could talk about all day. I found tons of books and videos and websites and PDFs and blogs about the history of tattoos, and even specifically about tattoos with spiritual significance. So be on the lookout for this topic again in the future. Astrology has already come up a lot through this episode, and part of that is because it's all very topical, and part of that is because I am obsessed and I have fully drunk the Kool-Aid of astrology. How can I argue with the cosmos, right? So we're going to go full astro right now. Your whole body is full of parts with their own astrological, planetary, and elemental associations. In fact, there's so much of a connection that there is an entire branch of astrology known as medical astrology. Medical astrology is one of the more ancient uses of it. Back in ancient Greece, if you were a doctor or physician of any kind and you didn't study medical astrology, well, you were just a complete hack. This is another topic that could be an entire episode because it's really fun. So we're going to focus on three things. Your sun sign, your rising sign, and your sixth house. Your sun sign is your main zodiac sign and the easiest one to figure out. You know, it's based on the date of your birth. Each sign is associated with a part of the body, and you may find these parts cause you extra strife or get used a lot all throughout your life. I'm a Capricorn, which rules the knees, joints, and skeletal systems. As a child, I broke every one of my limbs. I also broke my ass and spent my whole life with broken bones, sprained ankles and wrists, and had such bad knees that is actually what led my doctor to mistakenly diagnose me with Ehlers-Danlos syndrome as a kid, because it happens to run in my family, right? My joints are still pretty bad and like fuck knees for real. But I'm just going to have to take extra care with my bones forever. You know, I can take calcium and I can pay attention. I can do that. So here are the body parts associated with the other sun signs. Aries rules the head, face, brain, and eyes. Taurus is the throat, neck, thyroid gland, and vocal tract. Gemini is arms, lungs, shoulders, hands, nervous system, respiratory system, and brain. Leave it to Gemini to just be doing all of these things, right? Cancer is the chest, breasts, and stomach. Leo is heart, chest, spine, spinal column, and the upper back. Virgo rules the digestive system, intestines, spleen, and nervous system. Libra rules the kidneys, the skin, the lumbar region, and the butt. No joke. Scorpio, as our sexy sign, is of course the reproductive system, your genital sexual organs, as well as your bowels and your entire kind of excretory system. Sagittarius is hips, thighs, liver, and the sciatic nerve. Capricorn, as I said, is knees, joints, and skeletal system. Aquarius rules your ankles, calves, and circulatory system. And Pisces rules the feet, toes, lymphatic system, and adipose tissue, which is fat tissue. Pisces are notorious foot fetishists. Or, if they're not, they usually have very cute feet. That's what I will say. Every Pisces I've ever met just has really nice, adorable feet with like these cute little toes. I just have such long, stupid, bony feet. I'm like outrageously jealous about Pisces' feet. It's very odd. So your sun sign can also give you an idea of your general appearance. You know, Capricorns are usually long and tall, while Aries are often small but very mighty. Taurus is very sexy and thick with two C's, and Pisces are soft and dreamy looking and, like I said, have very cute feet. The other sign to look at for hints about your appearance and how to use that to your advantage is the rising sign. You need the time of your birth to find this one. Your rising sign is right on the line, the cusp of the first house. And the first house is the house of the self. So this sign can tell you a lot about you. The rising sign can show what you project out there. Sometimes it's described as how people see you, the mask you wear, or how you want people to see you. It can also indicate the parts of your body that attract the most attention. Miss Scorpio rising, which is all about the eyeballs. And boy, is that ever something I've known about my whole life. That's really the only place I put makeup. And I actually struggle with making eye contact with people because of my anxiety, right? It's so awkward. But every time I do make eye contact with like someone, they practically fall in love with me. It's very odd. But if I and other Scorpio risings can master eye contact and sending out vibes with your eyeballs, you can get anything you want. Unfortunately, we're the sign also most likely to throw out an evil eye without actually trying. So that's not great. Aries, here's your most attractive feature, and it's, you're going to laugh, but it's your eyebrows and your all-around striking facial features. I am very attracted to Aries' rising eyebrows and a lot of physical traits of solar signs like Aries and Sagittarius. But with Aries, it's the dark features and nice eyebrows. Not lying. Okay, so Taurus. Taurus rising has beautiful lips and the throat or the neck. They have this very sensual and voluptuous vibe. So accentuating that can really work to your advantage. Gemini are always youthful. They're often very funny and they have a great smile. They'll also usually have a really, really nice voice that is very enticing or attractive to people. They also have beautiful skin. Because they're such a youthful sign, they usually have very beautiful skin that is just, you know, rosy cheeks. Beautiful skin. Nice big smile. Way to go, Gemini. Cancer. Cancer is the lunar sign, right? You have this very beautiful, soft face. And often Cancers are busty or curvy up top. My Cancer mother was not, but she was later in life after you have kids. That's what happens. But your whole vibe really creates this very soft and lunar look. Leos have the best hair. It sounds so silly, but Leos have the best hair. It's usually shiny. And for those with blonde hair, the color is just like, it's like an unnatural level of solar warmth. It's outrageous. I find all Leos have this incredibly beautiful, shiny, and very healthy hair that is expressive. It says a lot about them. If you're a Virgo rising and want to knock some folk dead, these are the people to show off abs or how solid you are. You know, you're like a very strong but average. If you're a Virgo rising, the way to knock people dead is with your abs or showing how solid you are. If you're a Virgo rising and you're someone who likes to go to the gym, actual muscle definition, regular muscle definition, is one of your most attractive features. But in general, Virgo rising creates someone with the kind of boy or girl or non-binary person next door type of vibe. So nothing outlandish. Very comfortable and strong. Libra rising, as I said, has the best ass. Even if it's a small ass, it's usually perfect. Also, I find both Libra sun and Libra rising just have this very charismatic face. You know, it makes you want to be near them. It makes you feel comfortable. And it's usually very pretty, even very attractive, even if they're not conventionally attractive. Scorpios have the piercing eyes, and usually it's said that they have an overall sexual or sensual vibe when they have a Scorpio rising. As gross as it sounds, the expression dripping with sex really does kind of explain the whole Scorpio rising vibe, since it is a water sign. It's also a very kind of dark and spooky vibe. Lots of black clothes and black eye makeup. Scorpio is such a funny cliche. Sagittarius rising is all about the limbs and how you move. You might have fairly long arms and legs. You might be kind of strong, even if you're not athletic. So you always have this look like you're ready for an adventure, right? You're ready for anything. Even if you are kind of lanky or clumsy, that is all really part of your charm. And how you walk and how you swing your arms and how you grab things and how you hug people, all of that is very Sagittarius rising and very exciting. Capricorn risings have the best legs, you know? Shorten those skirts, wear some tight pants, don't skip leg day, and invest in a really good leg moisturizer. Upper leg is more the domain of Capricorn, so from the knees up. Aquarius is another leggy rising sign, but this time it's the lower legs, ankles, and feet. All of that is very truly beautiful. Usually long, often kind of thin, and with really elegant feet. So you might have long toes like I do. This sign would benefit from wacky toenail polish. You want really avant-garde or artistic tattoos and jewelry in this area, and Aquarius can pull off really outrageous or very high shoes like no one else. Pisces, like I said, Pisces rising often have very cute feet and a cute, soft appearance and really big, cute eyes. Like, I just think Pisces and Pisces rising are the cutest. Their eyes are so deep that you could absolutely fall in. And anytime they rock those Pisces colors, you know, mermaid type colors, those deep, watery colors, it's like a siren call, and I just want to dive right in. It's beautiful. The last point in your chart we're going to look at is the sixth house, which rules health, daily routines, and hygiene, and your relationship with pets, which is fun. Look at the sign that your house is in first. This can tell you a little bit about your overall physical health. Mine is in Taurus, which I'm very excited to share, means I'm prone to being fat and issues with my throat and vocal cords. I always wondered if fatness would show up in my chart, and it does, and it's not just here. I'm very excited. Also, all throughout my childhood, I had a lot of issues with throat infections and tonsillitis, lots of losing my voice. And now, of course, I use my vocal cords and my throat chakra quite a bit. After you look at the sign that your house is in, you look at the planets that are in the sixth house. Oddly, I have none. The cool news is that no planets in the sixth house means you shouldn't have a lot of serious health problems in your life, and will no doubt make it to an old age with some pretty good health. How fucking rad is that? So I'm gonna be fat, but it's not gonna fuck up my life. Take that, everyone. You can also look at the planetary ruler of the house. So Venus rules Taurus. So Venus is the ruler there. And the places Venus shows up in your chart. And then, of course, the planets in the house and the signs that they are in. Having no planets in any house means that you've probably dealt with issues in this area in past lives. And you don't really need to deal with all that in this life because you've moved on to the next lesson. If you have a lot of planets in the sixth house, you might have a lot of health problems. You might take your hygiene and your fitness incredibly serious. You might have a very busy general life routine. And health and health-related pursuits could be a big part of your life. When it comes to your planets, something like Mars in the sixth house is very interesting because Mars is a very action, energy, and, you know, muscle-oriented planet. If Mars is in a sign in which it's happy and thrives, like a fire sign or even an air sign, this could indicate a lot of activity and fitness-related pursuits and how you deal with your energy and what effect it has on your life. If Mars here is in a water sign, you might find you have a little less energy. You might have softer muscles. And if it's Pisces, adipose tissue, aka fat. Guess what sign Mars is in my chart? So if it's Scorpio as a water sign, you know, sex might be a very active activity for you, lots of high energy. And it might play a big part in your daily life and makes you feel like you're living your healthiest life. Sex might be a big part of it. In an earth sign, you have a very stable amount of energy. Virgo is a very energetic and very fit earth sign. So Mars in Virgo has a lot of very solid energy. Now, this is just a tiny snapshot of medical astrology, and I'll make sure I include links to information and the books that I used in the description of the show, so you can look at parts of your own chart that tell you all about your magical body. I also, like I said, created a Pinterest board all about magical body, and there is a lot of interesting information there about what different signs mean, where to find more about health and your physical body in your birth chart, and anything else that I use to research the topic today. Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode, the first episode where the Fat Feminist Witch officially switches to Fridays. So Fridays is when the episodes will be coming out now. Lately, I've been sharing some of the quotes that I featured in my new book at the end of each episode. And today's is short and sweet, but one of my absolute faves. Are we human because we gaze at the stars, or do we gaze at the stars because we're human? And that is from Stardust by Neil Gaiman, which is like one of my favorite books and movies about magic. I haven't even read a bunch of Neil Gaiman, but Stardust really blew my mind. It's lovely. If you want to find out more about me and the show, you can head to thefatfeministwitch.com or find me all across social media, including Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and Pinterest. To support the show, you can, of course, buy my new book at the Grimoire Journal, A Place to Record Spells, Rituals, Recipes, and More. You can buy it anywhere you buy your favorite books online, and you can also find it in my bookshop.org store, along with the books that I used for today's episode. So you can find that at bookshop.org/store/fatfeministwitch. You can also become a supporter at patreon.com/thefatfeministwitch, or go to my website and click Buy Me a Coffee to make a small one-time donation. If you have a witchy service or product you'd like to advertise on the show, visit advertisecast.com/thefatfeministwitch for pricing and plans. I hope you all have a wonderful weekend exploring your truly magical bodies, witches.